I'm Marty Moscow-Wain. Welcome to Radio Times. There is a blizzard of political ads on TV a day before the Pennsylvania primary as candidates make their last-minute appeals. The presidential race has been sucking up much of the media oxygen, overshadowing two statewide races in Pennsylvania for the U.S. Senate and for Attorney General. We featured one-on-one interviews with the candidates, excluding Senator Pat Toomey, who is running unopposed. So today, it's a pre-election cram day session with clips from those interviews and analysis from our guests. And let me introduce them to you. A very familiar voice to WHYY listeners, Dave Davies, here with us in our Philadelphia studio, senior reporter for Newsworks, also writes the off-mic blog, which should be a regular reading assignment for everybody. He and Katie Culinary have been covering the candidates and these races. And Dave, always a pleasure. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be back, Marty.
And joining us by telephone is Tom Baldino. He's a political science professor at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And Tom, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Well, good morning.
Good morning to you. And let me just do a quick little recap here. So we've got Democrats challenging Republican Pat Toomey. And these are for the Senate, Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate. We've got Joe Sestak, Katie McGinty, and John Fetterman. Just added Joe Vidvarka. This was a decision just made by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. The Democrats running for the nomination for Attorney General are Josh Shapiro, Stephen Zappala, and John Morganelli. Republicans running for that nomination are Joe Peters and John Rafferty. And you can go to whyy.org/radiotimes and listen to all those interviews. And again, we will be playing some clips. Dave, let me begin with you. And what's so interesting is we look at this race between Katie McGinty and Joe Sestak for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate. It is getting closer. And is it getting testier as well?
Well, it's been testy all along. I mean, Katie McGinty, who is the establishment candidate, I mean, folks who follow this closely will recall that Joe Sestak, the former admiral, former congressman who ran and lost narrowly to Pat Toomey 6 years ago, has been running hard at this and began this race with a significant lead over Katie McGinty, who was loved by the establishment, recruited by the establishment because they wanted an alternative to Sestak, but she was behind, and she has attacked Sestak in a number of ways on his stands on Social Security, on votes he's taken in Congress, and has chipped away at the lead. The big difference, really, Marty, and I have to say, you know, we'd love to think that these are all votes cast on merits and that people really looked at positions and records, but the reality is that to get – this is a huge state, and to get – a lot of voters paying attention to you quickly, you still need millions of dollars in TV ad buys. And Katie McGinty has benefited from a lot of spending by outside groups. The National Democratic Party, $1.6 million. Emily's List, the feminist pro-abortion rights group, $1.6 million. Service Employees International Union for several hundred thousand. And that has given her a huge edge in TV advertising in the last down the stretch. And so she seems to be pulling ahead. John Fetterman, the guy from Braddock, who everybody finds really interesting and compelling, has gotten attention. He got the endorsement of the Harrisburg newspaper, hasn't had the money to introduce himself to voters, and so he lags behind in the polls.
Tom, anything you want to add on John Fetterman? And then I do want to play a couple of clips.
Well, Fetterman had received a fair amount of national attention some years ago, shortly after he took the mayoralty in Braddock. I think he even had a major spread in the New York Times Magazine. And, you know, he was an oddity, a curiosity, certainly by virtue of his physical appearance, but also by, you know, the fact that he was willing to tackle the challenges of a literally dying city and turn it around. And that makes a great story. But as Dave pointed out, he is terribly underfunded, and very few people know who he is, aside from those who happen to read the New York Times. And the other person, Joe Vidvarka, has literally, within the last week, just been added to the ballot, and he is also very, very underfunded. And the only reason to be concerned or to be even talking about both gentlemen is they will have an impact regionally on the outcome of the race. You know, and they're both Western PA individuals. Western voters tend to be more parochial, and I don't mean that to be critical, but that they tend to vote for their own. And when that happens, it's going to probably draw support from both McGuinty and Sestak, neither of which can afford to lose any Democratic votes at this point. It's going, you know, the, as Dave pointed out, Sestak was in this early and was way ahead. But you know, Sestak's been running essentially for the last 3 to 4 years, going around meeting with all kinds of local Democratic organizations. And he has good, deep grassroots support, but only among people who got to know him that way. But this last few weeks of heavy campaign advertising has really eaten into his lead, which isn't surprising.
Very quickly, because I do want to play some clips.
I know we want to get to the clips,
we
but
do.
I just want to mention, in terms of Joe Vodvarka, this guy added at the last minute, you know, county election officials, this came too late for many of them to change their ballots. And in Washington County, in southwestern Pennsylvania, voters who go to the polls there will be given a machine to cast their other votes. But for the United States Senate, not just Vodvarka, but any of the candidates, they will be given a separate paper ballot.
A paper ballot.
A paper ballot.
In 2016.
And the other campaigns are worried, well, how do you control that? Who's going to do this? I mean, I think in Lancaster County, they're going to be told to write in Vodvarka. It's kind of a wrench in the works here, and it'll be interesting to see what effect it has.
Well, let me play a couple of clips here. One aspect of being in today's Congress that faces any incoming senator, certainly on the Democratic side, is the persistent gridlock between the two parties. Here's Joe Sestak explaining the effects that this has had on the electorate.
Frankly, Americans don't trust either party's leadership anymore. Look, I used to say I'm running with the Tea Party. I may violently disagree with their policies. We both felt the establishment let us down. The biggest deficit we have in America, the trust deficit. And so that's why I really am emphasizing, how can I earn your trust? Because I don't want to just win, Marty. I want to govern. And you can't do it without trust.
Katie McGuinty explained her diplomatic approach to dealing with those on the other side of the aisle.
What I bring to this race is 25 years of being in the arena, both in Washington and in Harrisburg, and finding that common ground. I don't believe that anybody has a lock on the truth. And so I'm a person who genuinely welcomes and encourages participation of diverse points of view. I work at building buy-in. That's important. You know, you can disagree, but you don't have to be disagreeable.
Candidate John Fetterman, on the other hand, put the onus on the GOP for the stalemate.
I'm not going to Congress or the Senate with lofty goals. I haven't said, if you send me there, I'm going to fix everything and I'm going to break the gridlock. I mean, that's the opposite of what I've said. You know, how will I bridge across the aisle in any way that the other side will want to reasonably interact? At the end of the day, pragmatism and bipartisanship are desirable, but when the other side is being unreasonable and taking things to an extreme, you know, that's what leads to this.
Dave, just a brief comment here. I mean, it's interesting to see, thinking of the mayor of Braddock or thinking of, frankly, these other two candidates. You go to Senate, you're a newbie, you're in the bottom of the totem pole. I'm thinking of Cory Booker, you know, was saving people buildings on fire in Newark, New Jersey, and now a junior senator.
Right. You're starting in an institution that works on seniority at the bottom. What's interesting to me about this is everybody, of course, says we need bipartisanship. All this polarization is terrible. But how do you actually do anything about it?
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me that Katie McGuinty, when she was Tom Wolf's chief of staff, really angered Republicans. She made a speech at one point in which she said they were lining their pockets with their proposed pension reforms. And this made it harder for the administration to work with Republicans in the House. Now, she may have had a point, but that was a circumstance where her job was to work with the legislature and get things done. And I don't think she did a particularly effective job there. She's also made the point of attacking Joe Sestak for even remotely considering any cuts to Social Security, attacked him for calling Social Security entitlements. I mean, it's the kind of rigid position that if you hold to it in office, can lead to stalemate.
Tom, I want to play some more clips, so hold on and I'll toss a question to you. Obviously, keeping the economy afloat and helping to strengthen the middle class is a perennial issue in any congressional candidate. John Fetterman explained his approach to this as mayor of Braddock and his plans to mimic his tactic in Washington.
The only things that have ever made a difference and made our community better are resources, advocacy, awareness, and investment. And those are the things that we have done and we have fostered in Braddock, and those are the things that, we would like to foster and accomplish for cities all across Pennsylvania. You know, these places, I believe, need a champion, need somebody that has the appropriate level of experience, and that's really, you know, the essence of why we're in the race.
Katie McGinty discussed her priorities in reducing poverty.
We've made a lot of progress in this country in taking on civil rights issues. Now, we have many challenges that remain, as exemplified in the Black Lives Matter movement. One of the things that concerns me is that so many of those gains stand to be lost because of this deep concentration of poverty we are seeing. But we can turn that around.
How?
It's about education, good jobs. You know, I'm thrilled to see the Cranes, the economic development in North Philly and elsewhere. But, you know, the crews on those cranes need to look like the neighborhood. Mm. We need to make sure that we have an inclusive economy that's giving everyone a chance, and the job training and apprenticeship efforts to develop the skills that are needed.
Joe Sestak brought up what he saw as the main cause of income inequality in America.
The biggest scourge we have in America today, income inequality. The only difference I have is to fix it, it can't just be redistributing benefits and a more progressive tax system. We may need that. But you got to fix it by economic mobility. What's the right education investment? Because that's our homeland defense. How do we get small businesses creating jobs? How do we get the fact that the pregnancy discrimination has a hole a Mack truck could drive through? And today, the largest percentage of increases in discrimination brought to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is no longer race. It's pregnancy discrimination. And they're laid off. That hurts income inequality. And by fixing the PDA, Pregnancy Discrimination Act, we can fix that. And in particular, we have to get children of color educated.
Tom, about a minute or so before our first break here, what do you hear in those clips?
Well, what I hear is a great deal of overlap in that all of the candidates seek to have government do something to address income inequality, to increase the number of jobs. But the great paradox here is for all those people who are angry with and frustrated with the gridlock in Washington, it really comes down to how much more do I want from government, but I'm also unwilling to pay government to do, all right? So it's frustrating, and to go back to a point that David made earlier about, you know, members of Congress, especially a freshman member getting into office and trying to establish himself or herself, you know, typically or it's traditional for the public to hate Congress. I mean, historically, public opinion of Congress is low, but yet people tend to enjoy or like their own lawmaker. And so that gridlock that we see comes from people reelecting those incumbents year after year, and yet they run against the institution in which they're entering. So to get back to the main focus here, if anything is going to change, we really should be putting all new people in the Congress, but then are we going to elect people who are willing to spend money and raise taxes to cover the cost of the things we're spending money on to create jobs?
Tom, I got to jump in here only because we're almost up on a break.
Sure.
Talking with Thomas Baldino and Dave Davies, getting a cram session here on Radio Times, looking at the statewide races in Pennsylvania. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Artie Moscowane. Pennsylvanians, go to the polls tomorrow. We are bringing you a pre-election day cram session and pulling clips, I should say, to our listeners, edited clips from our interviews with all the candidates running for U.S. Senate and Attorney General in competitive races. And again, our guests are Dave Davies, WHYY senior reporter, author of Newsworks Off Mic blog, and Thomas Baldino, professor of political science at Wilkes University. He's written a number of books, including Voting Rights, Disputed Elections, and Electoral Reform, Minority Voting in the United States. And we've got some others as well that he has written. I do want to get back to some clips, and let me set them up for you. Seattle, as we know, has raised its minimum wage to $15 an hour. California set their $15 minimum wage plan into motion, and the issue has become a popular one among some of the Democratic candidates. When asked about raising the minimum wage, Katie McGinty had this to say.
If you're willing to work hard, we've always been about rewarding that work. We're not doing that anymore.
Here's Joe Sestak's take on the minimum wage.
If you do not raise the minimum wage above 50% of the average hourly wage, no jobs are lost. And by the way, there's statistical studies on this that if we could raise the minimum wage to $10.80 immediately and no jobs are lost, then you index it to inflation. And as wages increase, then they keep increasing to that $15 level. I actually voted to increase the voting wage when we went down there, and people tend to forget that it was a three-step process. Do we have to do it? Absolutely, for two major reasons. Right now, the minimum wage today is only 60% of what it was in the 1960s. And in addition, these are adults working there, particularly women. I think it's about two-thirds of those minimum wage are women, and about two-thirds of them are the major breadwinner for their families. This has to be done, but done in a pragmatic way, as I laid out.
And John Fetterman is a little more direct in his take.
I'm the only candidate in this race that has consistently supported $15 an hour minimum wage. So there's a significant policy difference there with the three of us. People have more money in their pocket to support, you know, small and local businesses. And at the end of the day, you know, we in the society shouldn't pretend that anybody can live off of $7.35 an hour or $8 an hour or $9 an hour. It creates this nightmarish world for folks that are trapped in these low-paying jobs, and we need a living wage. I can't overstate that enough. It's like we pay, you know, hundreds of thousands of people across this Commonwealth a salary that we know has no chance whatsoever of supporting themselves. And how on earth, you know, can we move a neighborhood or a community or in my case a town forward if we're not paying them enough to live in a dignified manner?
Talking with Tom Baldino and also with Dave Davison, again, playing clips from some of the candidates running for office here statewide in Pennsylvania. This issue, Dave, there was a report recently looking at some of the concentrated poverty in Pennsylvania. I think for some communities, they really haven't recovered from the recession. Was this a big issue, do you think? Or is this a big issue in Pennsylvania?
I think it's a big issue for Pennsylvanians and for a lot of people. I don't think it's an issue that particularly distinguished candidates in this election because there's so much agreement. I mean, I'm kind of surprised somebody didn't come out for a $16 minimum wage.
Just to differentiate themselves?
Yeah. I mean, not to be dismissive of it, but I think they pretty much generally agree that this needs to be done. And, of course, if they are in the United States Senate, getting that done will depend upon changing, you know, the partisan balance and the operating climate there.
Tom, a question, actually a tweet from Jim who wanted to know, and we'll look for the short answer to this, why is the establishment opposed to Joe Sestak? Dave talked about this briefly, but is it personal? Is it political? It goes back, you know, 6 years.
Yeah, it goes back to the 2010 Democratic primary when Arlen Specter was recruited by the Democrats in the Senate to change parties. We assume one of the assurances was that if he removed to the Republican Party or Democratic Party, that he would have a clear path to the nomination and through the primary. And Sestak threw his hat in the ring. He actually visited the president, was made an offer to, you know, some kind of federal job. Sestak stayed in the race and then, of course, defeated Specter 54-46 in that election. And ever since, the Democratic leadership has had nothing but disdain for Joe Sestak.
Anything you want to add to that,
Dave? You know, I think this is a political fight that actually says something meaningful about whether you want to vote for Joe Sestak. You know, he approached the party leadership in the last couple of years to say, can we mend this fence? Can we work together? And what he says is that the top leaders of the Democratic Senate basically said, we're going to give you the staff people, and when we have an issue, we have an order, we want you to say yes and nothing else but that. And what Joe says, look, I just can't do things that way. So you can look at it and admire his independence. Somebody on the other side of this said to me, think about this. I mean, the party looked, they saw Sestak, thought he was in a great position to run. How is it that he managed to fail to build bridges with any of them, any of the unions, any of the elected officials, any of the party structure? Does that not tell you something about Joe and the way he works? And I don't know what the answer is, but I think it's an interesting question.
I do, too, as well. An email from Paul. He wants to know which one can beat to the incumbent Pat Toomey. Tom, do we know the answer to that question yet, or is it too far into the future?
It's a little still a little far out. CESTAC did come very close to defeating Toomey in 2010 by 2 percentage points, 49-51 for Toomey, and that was in a wave election year when Republicans did very well across the country and in all the other races in Pennsylvania. So he has demonstrated the ability to go toe-to-toe with Toomey. On the other hand, if Hillary Clinton is the presidential nominee, having Katie McGinty as the Democratic senatorial candidate provides a powerful incentive for women to go to the polls and cast ballots for the first woman senator in Pennsylvania's history. That says something. And also for the first woman president, obviously. So there are things that both have that they can bring to their candidacies against Toomey.
And that's Thomas Baldino, professor of political science at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Dave Davies with us as well, WHYY senior reporter, author of the Newsworks blog called Off Mic. And we are talking about the statewide races in Pennsylvania a day before the primary. And you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me play another. These are two clips, actually, talking about trade from the interviews that we did on Radio Times. Almost all the candidates for president this election cycle have addressed the Trans-Pacific Partnership and other trade agreements, claiming they are detrimental to the American workforce. Here's John Fetterman.
I oppose the TPP. It's difficult for anyone to compete when they have the foreign companies that are receiving massive subsidies, and they have non-existent environmental laws, and they can pay their workers, 90% less than what our workers are being paid. So this idea that we can ever fairly compete when the deck is stacked against them is just not possible. You know, our workers and our firms like steel, when it's a level playing field, can compete and succeed. But you know, right now the problem is that you have nations that are actively trying to sabotage and eliminate what's left of our steel industry, and I think we have to step up and stand up to that kind of conduct and behavior.
Katie McGinty had this to say about creating a more vibrant domestic workforce.
So many of the innovations and research is done right here, but it's invented in America and then made and commercialized in Asia or Mexico or Europe. I wrote a strategy to say, let's bring those jobs back home. Science education, getting girls, for example, involved in STEM, science, technology, engineering, math. I think job training and apprenticeships programs so that we have the skilled machinists, welders, everything else that we need to translate basic research into commercial products. We can grow good family-sustaining jobs in this country.
Dave, did the TPP, in your coverage of these candidates, how much did that come up in debates and interviews with the candidates?
It came up when they were asked about it, and we heard comments like we just heard here. I mean, all of them are good ideas, I think. You know, Katie talking about creating family-sustaining jobs and being innovative in the way we train and educate people. All those things, of course, cost money, and they require legislation and funding and bipartisan cooperation to make them happen. So my view of these things, a lot of the time you want to look at the biography, look at what people have done, you know, to get some sense of whether they can accomplish what they say they want to.
And Tom, is trade, you know, trade is certainly on the national front, trade has become very much a part of the presidential candidates. Does it play out in Pennsylvania, do you think, from your perspective?
Well, it should, because Pennsylvania does have a substantial trading industry companies that export all kinds of things. But it's a very complicated issue. And intellectually, anyone should support free trade. But the problem is, as it gets popularized, it really ends up being a discussion about what's really fair here.
Yeah.
I mean, are we moving jobs out of the country that really should go out of the country because it could be those things that could be made, then those jobs could be made more cheaply elsewhere? But how are we preserving work for those who are left behind without a job? And I think that's what McGinty was getting at, you know, trying to re-educate people who have lost jobs. And it's going to be something that the next Congress has to take up if, in fact, the TPP is adopted, you know. So yeah, it should be an issue, but I don't think it's really a serious one because it's so technical.
It is technical. A tweet, Dave, aren't McGinty's flood of outside ads exactly what Democrats say they hate about Citizens United?
Yeah, and she says it too. I mean, she says we need campaign finance reform, but the fact is campaigns are expensive, and she says she's proud of the people that are supporting her, union members, people who believe in choice for women, environmentalists, and of course, as we've discussed, some of them are party leaders who definitely right. want her to win over Joe Sestak.
Let me play another. These are two more clips. Donald Trump and Ted Cruz's positions on our country's approach to handling immigrants has made immigration another top issue in this campaign, certainly on the national level. Katie McGinty focused on the economic benefit that immigrants bring to our nation.
I do favor full and comprehensive immigration reform. Look, I think that we should be welcoming of those who can bring skills. I think that grows the economy. I think it makes the pie bigger. And as some evidence of that, there was an article just the other day saying that more than half of startup companies in this country that have reached $1 billion in revenue were started by immigrants.
John Fetterman focused on how America needs to be more welcoming to those entering from outside of the country.
If you look at the kind of terrible and hateful rhetoric that's coming out of the other side, it doesn't seem like that's a party that really wants to have, you know, immigration reform. That doesn't change the fact that we need immigration reform. That doesn't change the fact that I have the wonderful family that I do because of immigration, and the fact that their immigrant story is a positive one that that ends up making this country better and stronger. And I think that's the overwhelming majority of immigrant stories in this country. And we have to remember that. We have to fight for that. And we also have to stand up and accept Syrian refugees, orphans, this idea that one party is proud to say we won't accept any, you know, Syrian orphan children and all this other nonsense. It's un-American. We need a comprehensive immigration reform. But if the other side refuses to grow up and govern, it, like everything else, becomes difficult to accomplish.
Let me get Frank from, it looks like Palmyra, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. Frank, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Marty, could you phrase this question out to your guests, please? What effect the voting temperament that causes people to vote for Trump, what effect is that going to have on the elections you're talking about with your guests?
Well, I think you've raised the question perfectly, Frank. Thanks for calling in. Tom, is there going to be a Trump effect in Pennsylvania, certainly, and on these particular races?
Well, if there is, and there probably will be some, if those angry voters who would support someone like Trump should probably support some, would, you know, look, to be logically consistent, they would want to support someone like Sestak, who is not part of the establishment, or Fetterman. But Fetterman is well known. McGinty is the candidate of the establishment, and so she shouldn't benefit from that kind of anger that Trump supporters demonstrate.
What do you think, Dave?
I think it's very hard to predict. I mean, people that really love Trump are on the other side.
Right.
I think Tom's right. I mean, to the extent that people are looking for answers outside the box and insurgents, it seems to me Fetterman is really the profile. As we've discussed, it's been hard for him to reach enough voters to really get their attention.
Let me toss something a little bit, just because I know you hosted a debate on the congressional race involving incumbent Shaka Fatah. Dave, this was here at WHYY. I just want to take a couple moments just to give you a chance to weigh in on that race, which is fascinating.
Right. Well, it's fascinating because we have a congressman who's running while under indictment. I mean, he is facing a long federal indictment which says he orchestrated the theft of government and foundation funds to repay an illegal campaign loan. Shaka Fatah has been in office for 22 years, hasn't had a competitive primary in two decades, but suddenly, now that the indictment happens, he has three formidable challengers, none of whom will talk about the indictment.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, no, that really has nothing to do with this. I mean, the best known is Dwight Evans, the state representative who's been representing West Oak Lane in Northwest Philadelphia for, 36 years. I think it's an interesting race, and I don't know that anybody knows what's going to happen. I ran into both Evans and Fatah feet from one another at an event yesterday. They shook hands, seemed to shake hands warmly, and then in separate interviews with me predicted that they would prevail.
Wow.
Fatah says people know his record. He's been doing good things for the community, bringing home funding for education and brain research, and they are going to be skeptical of the government's case. I think there is some reason to think that that is going to be the case among a lot of voters. On the other hand, the opposition is split three ways. I should just mention, besides Dwight Evans, Dan Muroff, who is an attorney, former president of Ceasefire PA, is also in the race, as is Brian Gordon, who is a commissioner from Lower Marion Township.
Oh, fascinating. Tom, looking at tomorrow and looking at voter turnout, it is a presidential election year. It is a primary. We should say to our listeners, it's a closed primary. That's how Pennsylvania does election politics. What are your anticipations in terms of turnout?
Yeah, I'm expecting it to be somewhat higher than the normal primary election turnout in PA, which is somewhere between 20% and 30%. Given all the interest on the Republican side, Republican turnout should be even higher than 30. It could be as close to 40 or maybe a little higher. Democratic turnout probably would be over 30%. Just how much over 30 remains to be seen, but so I would guess 35%. You know, that would not be out of the realm of possibility on that one. But it is a closed primary, and some people may find themselves going to the polls and then discovering that, they can't vote because they're registered as independent.
Well, and there's a whole delegate thing. I don't think we could do justice in a whole hour on how the voting for the delegates plays out. In fact, I should steer our listeners to a piece that Dave Davies did on his On Mic blog explaining the delegate process, and certainly worth a read to help you understand why people are tearing their hair out this election season.
Without getting into the whole thing, Marty, it doesn't affect Democrats.
Right.
Delegates will be apportioned according to how they do in the popular vote. The Republican side, it's a different and complicated thing, which will require voters to get educated before they go to the polls. And you can read about it.
Yes, you can. You can read about it in Dave Davies' Newsworks Off Mic blog. He's WHYY's senior reporter. Also with us, Thomas Baldino, professor of political science at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, author of a number of books, Voting Rights, Disputed Elections and Electoral Reform, U.S. Election Campaigns, Minority Voting in the United States. And we'll be talking more after this very short break. Stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with Tom Baldino, political science professor at Wilkes University, and WHYY's Dave Davies. In fact, we just spent time talking about the Democrats who will be challenging Pat Toomey in the fall, Joe Sestak, Katie McGinty, John Fetterman, and the just-added Joe Vidvarka. We now want to shift gears and talk about the race for attorney general, the Democrats running for the nomination, Josh Shapiro, Steve Zappala, and John Morganelli. Republicans running for the nomination, Joe Peters and John Rafferty. And again, we interviewed all of those candidates, and we have edited clips to play during this hour. Well, we all know the heroin epidemic has become a major problem in Pennsylvania. What was thought not so long ago as an urban problem has spread throughout the state. All of the candidates have pledged to increase the focus on treatment over incarceration. Both Republican candidates, John Rafferty and Joe Peters, pledged on this as well, with Rafferty adding that he would like to see more regulation and education when it comes to prescribing opiates. On the Democratic side, Josh Shapiro's plan is to reduce the amount of prescribed opioids, provide police with the naloxone, and increase education. John Morganelli favors the increase of naloxone use and education, and he adds,
"But I also would like to see the prescription drug monitoring program in the Attorney General's office expanding the types of drugs monitored to include Schedule 2 through Schedule 4 drugs. Lastly, we need to stop the poison from coming in our streets. That's tough enforcement. It's called drug delivery resulting in death. It's a homicide case. I also would like to see the Attorney General's office form a transnational gang unit, because 99.9% of the drugs that come in to Pennsylvania come in through Mexico. We need transnational gangs to attack these gangs that are going outside Pennsylvania, and it's actually international gangs. You know, the feds do some of this stuff, but quite frankly, in the age of terrorism, which we live in now, a lot of our federal resources are rightfully focused on terrorism activities. we need to be doing more so that they can free up their resources to do more for those types of issues, terrorist issues.
In case you miss it, Morganelli mentioned that prosecuting drug dealers who have sold drugs to someone who have overdosed as a homicide, he sees that as something that he would like to do if attorney general. Steve Zappala would like to focus more on the doctors who prescribed opiates to patients.
One of the things we haven't done well is we have not impressed upon the physicians who prescribe medication. And today, everybody specializes, right? So if you go in and you got an elbow injury, one doctor may prescribe a certain type of pain medication. And migraine, somebody else is going to prescribe something. So I think we have to hold our physicians, and they're not criminals. I think we just have to impress upon them that you're facilitating a very, very substantial problem, and there are going to be ramifications to it. But that has to come from a discussion first. And together, I think we could impact that. If you're not going to work with me, then there'll be another way that we're going to come at that, whether that be criminal indictment of certain persons. But we're going to be looking into the industry very substantially.
And, Tom, the backstory is that Kathleen Kane, the current attorney general, is not running for reelection. In fact, faces a criminal trial later this year, which has opened up of all sides, Republicans and Democrats, to run for attorney general in Pennsylvania. What is some of your takeaways from this race?
Well, it seems to me that the general theme here between clusters of candidates on the Republican side and on the Democratic side is, are you, as a candidate, someone who's experienced in prosecution? Have you been a DA and actually prosecuted candidates or criminals? Or are you someone who is going to emphasize the management of the office and your experience as someone who knows how to manage people? And so you've got candidates like Shapiro and Rafferty, who emphasize the management side, while Morganelli and Peters and Zappala would argue they have prosecutorial experience, even though in most cases, with the exception of Morganelli, they actually haven't been in a courtroom for many years, right?
Yep.
They've been managing people who prosecute crimes.
What do you say?
I think Tom's absolutely right. And this is interesting because, you know, you can certainly make the case that if someone who's going to run an 800-person department ought to have some experience in prosecuting cases, in managing investigations, and that's very relevant. But remember, this office, as other statewide offices, are stepping stones to the governor's mansion. It's very, very often the case that people who run for attorney general, state treasurer, have their eyes on the governor's mansion. And so you could argue that, we don't necessarily want some ambitious politician being our chief prosecutor because they're going to pull punches depending on what suits their political interests. On the other hand, you can say, well, we want a veteran prosecutor. Well, we had a veteran prosecutor in Tom Corbett, who I think did a pretty good job of prosecuting political corruption.
He sure went after people.
Absolutely. Republicans and Democrats got to the governor's office, and I think one of the clear criticisms was that he brought a prosecutor's mentality to the governor's office, didn't have the political skills that he needed to advance even his own agenda. So it's interesting. You know, Josh Shapiro is talking about he sees this as the office as an agent of policy, you know. Education.
Well, let's not forget Ed Rendell, right, who had lots of prosecutorial experience,
right,
and became governor, but he didn't take the path through the attorney general's office.
Sure.
But clearly a political animal, someone who enjoys interacting with his peers on the other side of the aisle.
Yeah, so I guess are you looking at somebody to be a prosecutor or a future governor?
Yeah.
I don't know.
and the candidates were making the case depending what their back experience was. Let me throw something else out here, and then we've got some callers that want to join the conversation. Gun violence, access to guns, also something that plagues many communities in Pennsylvania. Democratic candidate Stephen Zappala wants to focus on getting guns off the street. His opponent, Josh Shapiro, who has 100% rating from Ceasefire Pennsylvania, had this to say.
Number one, we have a special task force between the Attorney General's office and the DA's office in Philadelphia to deal with illegal guns. I would beef that up and expand it out to other communities all across Pennsylvania. Two, we're going to be far more aggressive on dealing with straw purchasers. You infiltrate those sales by putting far more attention, far more focus, far more agents involved in those kinds of transactions by partnering with local police and local DA offices to make sure you have the resources to make it a priority. I will. Third, we have a system here in Pennsylvania where when someone wants to go apply for a carry permit and they get rejected, oftentimes they'll go to another state where the standards are far less. I want to make sure we close all the loopholes with all the other states. Fourth, anyone who goes and applies for a carry permit and fails that carry permit because of criminal issues, we need to prosecute those folks. And then fifth, you need an attorney general who's going to use his bully pulpit to challenge the NRA, to speak out on these issues, and to ultimately effectuate real change.
John Morganelli's plan includes this.
If I'm attorney general, I'm going to put a regulation that says lost or stolen handguns must be reported to law enforcement. It has the same force and effect as if passed by the legislature. I want to bring a gun trafficking unit back into the office and make it work again. It worked for a while. It's sort of waned a little bit. If you're a gun owner and in your home you have someone who's mentally ill or is a child under the age of 18, you have a higher duty to keep your firearm inaccessible. And if that gun shows up in a crime by someone in your household, then you could be held criminally and or civilly liable.
On the Republican side, John Rafferty said he'd better enforce existing gun laws and expanding the now mismanaged gun task force in Philadelphia, expanding it to other cities. Joe Peters had this to say.
We need to do better at assimilating our gun laws. And there are laws on the books now that are very powerful. In terms of minimum mandatory crimes where you use a gun, straw purchases. We have task forces now, and I would expand those task forces where you are getting at the people who are legally acquiring guns and then illegally dishing them off to criminals. And I think you have to overlay that with the drug situation and now a terrorism situation, homegrown, which is a brand new problem that we need to look at.
Tom, how big are an issue are guns in Pennsylvania?
Oh, it's a very big issue. But the state is clearly divided between the urban areas and the rural areas. Where I live, many people own guns, and they own them for hunting, for sport. You get into the major cities like Philadelphia, and you have fewer gun owners, but probably as many guns in the hands of those who own guns. This is one of those issues that, regardless of who is elected, I give them, and if it's someone like Morganelli or Shapiro, I wish them a lot of luck taking on the NRA. The NRA is very deeply entrenched in this state, and when it wants to block something, it blocks it. So it's going to take a real sleight of hand feat to get anything changed in the state, let alone nationally.
Let me get Adrian on. Adrian calling us from Wynwood. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I just wanted to make a comment. You said that only Democrats and Republicans can vote in the primary, but there's an actual question on the ballot which everyone can vote for, and it has to do with the continuation of Philadelphia Traffic Court.
Adrian, I'm looking at Dave.
Yep, good point. Yep, it's absolutely the case that you can't vote for candidates in the party primaries, but you are entitled to vote for ballot questions. And you're right, that is one. That stems from the latest scandal at Philadelphia Traffic Court, at which its functions have already been removed. I mean, it's effectively dissolved by administrative action of the state Supreme Court, but this ballot question is aimed at a constitutional amendment which would permanently remove traffic court and throw salt into the earth where it once stood. It's not coming back.
And it's something that everyone, not just Philadelphia, but everyone in Pennsylvania
will vote on. Right.
Fair enough. Adrian, thanks for that correction. Well, Governor Tom Wolf has imposed a moratorium on the death penalty in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has only used the practice three times since it was reinstated back in 1976. On the Republican side, Rafferty expressed some discontent with Wolf's decision.
I do favor the death penalty in those aggravating circumstances, such as taking the life of a police officer, a firefighter, an emergency responder in the course of their duties, taking the life of a child in a purposeful manner, taking the life of an elderly person. The determination is made by the courts whether or not the death penalty is to be warranted. I disagreed with the governor on it, on his decision.
His opponent, Joe Peters, is in favor of the death penalty as well.
I think the death penalty, sadly, is a necessary thing. Obviously, and you can't say it enough, it is the last resort. We have to be certain it is not implemented in a disparate way or an unfair way, racially, demographically. Overlay that with the advances in science and DNA, and every time you pick up a newspaper, it gives you the chills to read how an otherwise guilty man was now innocent because DNA proved that he didn't or she didn't do it. Now, God forbid, we would have executed that person.
On the Democratic side, Josh Shapiro's focus was on fixing the current system.
Our death penalty system in Pennsylvania is fundamentally flawed, and it needs to be reformed. And I'm pleased to see that there is some attention being paid to this. We need to have a serious conversation quickly, not do the process quickly, but quickly convene and come up with a system that actually works. I think the death penalty should be reserved for the most heinous of crimes in Pennsylvania, but it doesn't work today. And the three people you cited who've been put to death over the last, I guess, three decades here in Pennsylvania have all voluntarily ended their appeals. The system costs taxpayers too much. It's unfair. Query whether it's discriminatory, and we have to make sure that we fix our system before we go out and employ it further.
And here's Stephen Zappala.
I think what the governor was asking for was an intelligent discussion about where are we going as a community in terms of whether the death penalty makes any sense.
Tom, is this an issue that the voters care about, vote upon?
Well, I think they do. I would guess, I haven't seen any recent polling, but the last that I saw, most Pennsylvanians favor the death penalty. But that's in the abstract. When most people then are informed that it costs millions of dollars to prosecute a case through all the appeals to actually carry out the death penalty, and then it isn't carried out because there are additional appeals, it does give people reason to then reconsider. So what is this and how is it not working? Why isn't it not working? And it seems to me that Shapiro and Zappala expressed the desire to really resolve or correct the problems in the system so that if we're going to have the option of executing someone for a capital crime, that it be done as expeditiously as possible. So that seems to be probably where most Pennsylvanians would be. You know, keep it as an option, but make sure it's done properly and as efficiently as possible.
You want to add anything to
I'll
that, Dave?
I'll just say, I think it's hard to make good decisions about criminal justice when we're electing prosecutors and judges. I mean, I just feel like people come to an analysis of this and then say, oh, my heavens, if I say that out loud, am I going to get defeated at the polls?
We are out of time here, so let me just rather than playing clips, which you don't have time for, just to summarize here. We did ask about abortion. Josh Shapiro saying he's the only candidate who is an abortion rights candidate. Zappala didn't really address the issue. John Morganelli says he is pro-life. John Rafferty said he was pro-life. And Joe Peters said he was pro-life as well, or anti-abortion. Also on fracking, it's worth noting that all the candidates for attorney general on both sides are interested in beefing up the environmental crimes division of the attorney general's office to be more aggressive in fighting the frackers when they violate the law and damage the state drinking water. Many noted that only two prosecutions had come down since the practice has been used in Pennsylvania. Any final words from you, Dave Davies, before we sign off here?
I'll just repeat the words of Chris Potter of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who began his story about the attorney general's race by saying, none of the five candidates are currently under indictment, and that's an improvement.
Oh, dear. Well, we will end on that note, and as always, Dave Davies, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Good to be here.
And he's WHYY senior reporter. You should read his off-mic blog at the Newsworks site. Also, thanks to you, Tom Baldino, for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Well, you're welcome.
And he's a professor of political science at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, author of a number of books, including Minority Voting in the United States, U.S. Election Campaigns. Also, go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and we have posted all of our one-on-one interviews with the candidates. You heard edited clips in this hour of Radio Times. I'm Marty Moskowing. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us for hour two. Much more coming back after this very short break. We'll be right back.